You may proceed.
May it please the court, I'm James B. Feynman on behalf of Mr. Charles Jeffries. My intentions are to reserve approximately 5 minutes for rebuttal. There is no definitive test for determining the trade, business, or occupation of any entity or a nonprofit entity. This is a mixed question of fact and law. This court has consistently held that we must determine the nature of the entity to be able to accurately define the trade, business, or occupation of that entity. Here, we submit that the foundational documents of the Harvey School Restoration Society, stated clearly that their reason for being was, quote, to purchase, restore, preserve, and maintain, close quote, the Harvey Schools.
But then, the commissioners made a factual finding that restore in this context, given the history of this, both the church and the society, does not include, quote, the construction business, and made a factual finding that on that basis alone, the argument ends, and there can be no statutory employer situation under any scenario. That goes to the Court of Appeals. Court of Appeals affirms on that fact. How is it not still a fact deserving deference here?
Well, the inquiry was the exact inquiry that this court rejected in the Rodriguez case. It's not whether or not the Harvey School Restoration Society was in the construction business. The question that has to be answered, which the commission and the Court of Appeals failed to answer, is, was the construction work that Mr. Jeffries doing part of the trade, business, or occupation of the Harvey School Restoration Society?
Well, that's obviously what the commissioners are saying. They're more knowledgeable than any of us on this test. They've been living with it every day for their entire career on this commission. And the Court of Appeals obviously quoted the right language. So it may be a little bit shorthand, but it still represents a factual finding, does it not?
Well, Your Honor, I think that it makes a difference what legal prism you view it through.
Sure.
And I think that this court has said, in the Rodriguez case, that you don't ask whether the potential statutory employer is in the construction business. That's the wrong inquiry. That's the wrong legal prism to look through. What you ask is, was the construction work that Mr. Jeffries was engaged in part of the trade, business, or occupation?
Okay.
And the commission looked through the wrong prism, and the Court of Appeals looked through the wrong prism, and that's why we're here.
If you presume they know the law, why wouldn't we interpret the opinion of the commissioners on this fact to mean the trade, business, and occupation of the foundation is to restore, and that does not mean actually to physically put hammers to nail, but to hire, to contract, to raise money, etc. And that seems to me to be a factual finding.
Well, you can say, all I can say is I'm using the words that the commission used, which are the words that this court rejected in the Rodriguez case, that you're asking the wrong question. You can't look, and we held this right from the beginning. This was the position of the fund right from the beginning of the case, that they were not in the construction business. And we said right from the beginning, you don't ask whether they're in the construction business. You ask whether the construction work that Mr. Jeffries was doing was part of the trade, business, or occupation of the Harvey School Restoration Society. And to do that, you have to look at the nature of the Harvey School Restoration Society. When you look at the nature of the Harvey School Restoration Society, clearly their foundational document stated that their purpose was to purchase, restore, preserve, and maintain. Then when you look at what they actually did, okay, those were their words, that's what they said they were going to do. Then you look at what they actually did, which is to purchase, what they actually did was that. And then you look at their own documents, they reported this is what we're doing.
Can I interrupt you for a second?
When you get to the nature.
Can I interrupt you for a second?
Yes, sir.
But the test goes on to say the trade, business, occupation, the way to understand it is this is what you normally do through your own employees. So if you go out and try to pull a fast one and hire independent contractors and pretend like they're not really your employees, we're not going to let you get away with that.
That's right.
But there are no employees with the foundation or Mosley or anyone else, or the church for that matter, that is rebuilding the objects of the restoration goals of the foundation. And if there were, then I think you'd have a great argument.
Well, I'm going to go back to the first part of what you said. You know, the Shell test is not always, the Shell oil test doesn't always work because of that situation that you described. There are entities out there who contract to do all of their work, but that is still their work, and that's what you have here. Their nature, their being, their reason for existence is to is what they said and what they did, to purchase, restore, preserve, and maintain the Harvey School. And they said right from the beginning they were going to do that by contracting out all their work. But it's still their purpose, their reason for being, their nature. And so,
why can't their purpose be, I'm going to run a charity, and I'm going to raise money, and I'm going to raise awareness, and I'm going to contract with others to do stuff? Why is it? Why would the statutory employer argument say, you can't do that, you're going to end up, you're actually the employer in all situations are going to deem you so?
I didn't understand the last test, part you said. But
is your test too broad? Because it goes far beyond Shell Oil.
No, I don't think it's too broad. I think, it's not too broad because the purpose of the workers' compensation statute and the statutory employer statute is to make it as broad as possible, because we don't want people engaging in trade businesses or occupations and incurring the horrendous, you know, result that we had here without coverage. And, you know, in this, on this record, you know, the leaders of the church said, we thought we had coverage. We were mistaken. The leader of the Restoration Society specifically said, I can't afford coverage. We're not getting it. Y'all be careful. So, you know, I think that I don't think our test is too broad, because it is the test that this court established in Rodriguez, and it fulfills the purpose of the workers' compensation laws, which is to be as broad as possible to make sure that the horrendous injury that Mr. Jeffries has suffered in this case is covered through the uninsured employer's fund. I hope I've answered your question.
But, I mean, intuitively, aren't these museums and charities, I mean, they're generally not hard hat types, right? So they're, you know, you got your Rotary Club and your lawyers and your retired people, whatever. And
so that's for humanity.
Okay, but I mean, like with these, you know, these museums. I mean, I live in Fredericksburg. We have all these museums, you know, and these old buildings that need maintenance. But they're not out there, and they don't have this. I mean, at least, and that may change if you win. But they don't have all these employees at their beck and call who are swinging hammers and, you know,
well,
so on.
You don't have to have employees. That's not the test at all. Remember, the statute is a statutory employee. It's for statutory employer. It's by statute. And, you know, what it is they are initiating enterprises, initiating ventures. And the policy of Virginia is to have workers' compensation coverage for that. They're supposed to have it. They didn't have it. And, you know, the statutory employer statute catches all the people that are left, and the uninsured employers fund catches those people that fall through that net.
That's a very, very broad restatement of the idea that if you don't have actual employees, we're going to search around for ways to find de facto employees just in order to get coverage.
Well, no, I don't think it's too broad, Your Honor. I think it's it's whether or not they were engaged in the trade, business, or occupation. Whether Mr. Jeffries was engaged.
That they normally use their own employees to do.
Well, that's the Shell Oil test, but this court has decided cases that say the Shell Oil test isn't applicable in the situation where a given enterprise, a given venture, contracts away all their work. It's still they're still, you know, come under the statutory employer concept, and I cited the cases of this court that stand for that proposition, and that's what we have here. So, you know, I don't think that it's overstated. I don't think it's overbroad. I think it's consistent exactly with the language that this court has used in the Rodriguez case. And when you use the language that this court has said to use, which is, you ask whether the construction work that Mr. Jeffries was engaged in was a part of the trade, business, or occupation of the putative statutory employer. I think on this record you have to say clearly that it was, and that he is entitled to compensation benefits under through the uninsured employer's fund, through the statutory employer concept.
And under your argument, I take it that these museums, you know, and so on, could just essentially write or rewrite their mission statement to say, well, we raise funds and we hire others and so on. In other words, they don't find themselves in this dilemma that this outfit has, because they said our job is to restore. They restate all those bylaws, whatever they have, that solves the problem.
Well, first thing I would say is I don't think there's any immunity for these types of enterprises. I mean, I think they are a venture or an enterprise that comes under the workers' compensation law. So there's no immunity that for the fact that they just happen to be.
No, I understand that.
Sorry?
No, I understand that.
Okay. All right. So then the second part.
So my point was you put a lot of weight on the statement of their mission and purpose.
I put weight on three things. The original foundational documents, what they actually did, the fact of what they actually did, and their own self-reporting, self-chronicled, this is what we did. And so
What did they do?
Well, they did what they said they were going to do. They purchased, they restored, they preserved, and they were in the process of maintaining the Harvey School.
Those are like descriptors. I mean, what did they physically do? You know, they restored. Well,
They found the building, you know, out in the woods. They made arrangements to buy it. They made arrangements to move it. When in moving it, it had to be disassembled and then moved and then reassembled. And that's all construction work. I mean, that's what.
But they didn't do the work. They paid other people to do all those.
And that does not exempt them from the statutory employer liability. That's the whole purpose of the statutory employer.
Why don't you do this for us? Define what a trade is.
Well, I would go right to the dictionary if I was going to do that. I mean,
okay.
A trade.
And then define what a business.
Well,
what is an occupation? Don't we just define those three terms in figuring out whether something is part of a trade, business, or occupation of an individual?
Well, no, you have to look at their activity and what the nature of that organization or that enterprise or that venture is.
Right, but fit them under those definitions. The things that they do have to fit under one of those definitions.
I think it's an occupation. I think it's that form.
And what you're really saying is that every charity that raises money to get stuff done for other people is essentially going to be a statutory employer the moment they hire independent contractors to rebuild the house, to build a hospital,
to take the kids.
The distinction, I think, is in Rodriguez. And in Rodriguez, they found that what that putative statutory employer was actually doing was their actual business, their actual trade or occupation was in leasing property. It wasn't in construction. And that was the construction that Mr. Rodriguez was doing was not part of what
let me give you a hypothetical. I set up a charity to support the construction of a new hospital in Suffolk, Virginia. And I raise money and I issue marketing brochures and I say, we're going to build a hospital. We're going to give our local town a first-rate hospital. And I don't have any employees building masonry or putting together building materials. I'm
right.
Just raising money to hire a general contractor to build a hospital. And am I going to have to go out and get comp insurance for 1,500 employees that work on that work site?
Well, you know, I don't think those are the facts that we have here.
Well, answer the hypothetical. What would happen under
your version? Well, I think it would depend, as all of our cases say, it would depend on the nature of the putative employer.
Okay,
and
the putative employer is a charity that's raising a ton of money, hiring people as independent contractors.
I don't think somebody suffered a quadriplegic injury in that building process, I think you would ask the question, was the construction work that they were doing part of the trade, business, or occupation of that charity?
Okay.
And
what you described, I don't think you would. They were building a hospital, and the whole purpose of the charity is to raise money to build a hospital.
All right. I think the nature of that organization is to raise money. And I don't think that's the same nature of this organization. And I don't think you could say in the facts that you described, hypotheticals you described, that the construction work that person was engaged in was part of the trade, business, or occupation of that charity. I think those facts are different from what we have here. And the only I'm running out of time, so I'm going to try to save some.
Okay.
May I please support? My name is Matthew Griffin. I'm here on behalf of the Uninsured Employers Fund. In this case, I believe the Court of Appeals correctly ruled on the case. It correctly determined that neither the Historical Society nor the church are the claimant's actual employer. I don't believe that's been appealed up. But they also correctly determined and applied the normal work test that we've been applying through Shell for years in determining that Mr. Jeffries was not engaged in the trade minister occupation of the church or historical society at the time he was injured. Justice Kelsey pointed out, I think the commission issued findings of fact which are binding upon the court. Those findings of fact were affirmed by the Court of Appeals. I think at this stage, they essentially are dispositive of and much of the inquiry. The commission, I believe, did find that restore didn't include construct. The claimant was constructing this structure. I think the commission, the full commission, in its remand opinion, as then affirmed by the Court of Appeals, found that that was not included.
But does Rodriguez, we heard about Rodriguez, does that change anything?
Well, I think Rodriguez, it's the law of the land, if you will. It is an opinion of this court of precedential value, and I think it's, we've all cited to it. I think it has significant importance in the case. But Rodriguez, I think, also stands for just what we're asking, application of the normal work test that is set forth in Shep, where we turn and we look to determine whether the activities which the claimant, the injured worker, the appellant in this case, was engaged in when he was injured, whether those are within the owner's business and normally carried on through the employees rather than through independent contractors. So Rodriguez is a little bit of an unusual case, but it does exactly what I think the court has asked and has been applying for years, which is the application of the normal work test. And that's what happened here. When you go back to the church, just to circle back, not to be too exhaustive in facts, this historical society was initiated by Miss Annie Mosby. As noted, I think in one section of the record, Mr. Feynman refers it to it differently, but the historical society is said to be formed to restore the Harvey School to its original condition and register it as the Virginia Historical Society, register it with the Virginia Historical Society. In 2003, that gets adopted into the church, and years go by, and I believe Ms. Mosby testified at the hearing and through the deposition in the record that the aspirations of the goal, the aspirations of the Historical Society to restore this church, things changed. The goals somewhat changed, and the activities and hopes of this society somewhat changed. There was insufficient money. There was not sufficient involvement of the members. The organization itself changed. And I think it's fair to say that it became a historical society. She testified, I believe, that they researched and wrote a book about the Harvey School and the families of the community of Callahan Hill. This was her mission. It meant a lot to her to preserve this, this schoolhouse. It is a site of our history, right? Both the good and the bad. But Ms. Mosby would not let this go. The Historical Society was created. They did get incorporated in the church. And then there's about a 9-year lapse between when it gets incorporated in the church and when Mr. Jeffries is injured. So in addition to the factual findings of the commission, I think you actually also have a difference in time and as to who is actually engaging these efforts. At the time,
sounds like a factual type finding. Do we have factual findings by the commission that would undergird that argument? I mean, I understand the appeal of it, but it...
No. I suppose you're right, Your Honor.
In other words, that seems to go to, well, it was Ms. Harvey and not the society, and so you know, why are we even, basically the injured worker is just, you know, looking in the wrong direction. But absent factual findings, I think it's hard for us to go down that path. But help me if I'm mistaken.
You're right. I believe both the full commission and the Court of Appeals specifically said that they're not addressing and have not addressed whether Ms. Mosby was an agent acting on behalf of the society or the church at the time.
But that's only for purposes of determining de jure employer-employee status, and it doesn't matter because we're talking about de facto employer status.
Statutory employer status, right. Correct. We're talking about that, and so we're looking at whether they used any employees to carry on this business.
So the commission made a factual finding directly. They are not. It's not part of the. They're not in the construction business. And we searched the record to determine whether there are any facts that support that finding.
I believe that's correct, Your Honor. And I think that is kind of a threshold issue, but I think just to give some context to where we are and how we ended up there. During the course of the argument and what's been presented in this case, there's been some presentation that we should apply a new test for nonprofits. But in nonprofits, we should look at some foundational documents. I think at first I'd like to point out that these documents that are referred to as foundational documents, I think the Court of Appeals describes them as the Historical Society's website and a document circulated within the Historical Society and the Church about its aspirational goals. These are not foundational in the sense of such as articles of incorporation, bylaws, articles of organization. This is not something submitted to either the Commonwealth or the federal government to secure some tax beneficial status. With respect to a new test, what's been requested is a new test for nonprofits. I would also argue against that because when you look at, and this may be an assumption, but the foundational documents of nonprofits, they likely set out a boundary of activities in which the entity can engage in. They don't consider, they're not a mandate, they're not prescriptive, they don't say you must do this. They set the boundary with which you may operate and still maintain your tax-exempt status. I also think this request for a new test for nonprofits, you know, I think it oversteps to some extent the bounds. It would seem to me that the new test and saying let's look at the foundational documents is based on the notion that there is some sort of preferential or beneficial tax status and that that is secured by submission of documents to the state, the federal government. But that determination of private entity, we're not looking at a public entity or a governmental entity or public utility, but in private entities, setting forth a different test to apply between nonprofit and for-profit businesses, it seems to me that may be really in the province of the legislature to determine that.
But did the website ever say our mission is to physically rebuild this school, to physically get out there and put our people to work and rebuild this school?
I do not believe that's
so even if
any of the documentation of Ms. Mosby or the Historical Society or the church.
And there were no facts that anyone ever did that or hired to do that or contemplated doing that.
That's correct. And correct. And with respect to the employees that are identified, so the Historical Society is brought within the church in 2003, and I believe Reverend or Pastor Reynolds identifies and submits discovery responses identifying the employees of the church. And in that case, I think we had the pastor, the secretary, the clerk, audiovisual or audio tech, a drummer, the choir, or organist, I believe. These were not individuals engaged in the field of building anything or restoring anything. These are what I believe, and I think the Court of Appeals correctly noted, that These are individuals carrying out the trade, business, or occupation of the church, which is their spiritual efforts. Going back, I just wanted to circle back with one other point with respect to the nonprofits. I probably belabored it, but I do think it's very different from the public entities and public utilities. This is not the case that we have here. There are various cases that have been cited, and those are treated differently. We look at, and I think that this court has articulated that we look at those entities differently. And I think one of the reasons we do that is because we have laws, we have rules, we have regulations which govern these public governmental entities and public utilities. So we should look at those laws, rules, and regulations.
How do we look at them differently in a statutory employer situation? Don't we always apply the same test to everyone?
Well, I think in the public utility section, you actually look as to whether the utility or governmental entity is mandated to do something, even if it doesn't use employees, and even if it uses subcontractors. If by statute, rule, or regulation that's been enacted creating this, it mandates it to do that, I think this court has found the statutory employer doctrine would extend in those circumstances.
But doesn't that go back to the definition of what someone's trade, business, or occupation is? I mean, if there's a mandate that they do something as part of their business, okay, yeah, and somebody's doing that, then they come under the rubric.
Correct, and I think in at least my assessment of it, and I'm not sure if this is what you're getting at, but in my assessment of it, these public utilities and governmental entities are mandated. There's some sort of prescriptive order for them to engage in these activities, which is different from a private entity, which gets, as Shell Oil has said, it had broad latitude to determine how it carries out its business, whether it uses employees or independent contractors. During the course of the appeal, there was also reference to violations of due process. I think in this case, there have been hearings. This case has proceeded for, let's say, the first hearing was in, I believe, May of 2015. We've gone at numerous levels, and as the claimant alleges, the appellant alleges, their position is they've been raising and serving statutory employer the entire time.
May I interrupt you again?
Yes.
Am I right that when the commission rules that a putative employer is in fact not a statutory de facto employer under the Comp Act, that necessarily one consequence of that is the Comp Act's immunity bar is inapplicable? Is that legally correct?
I believe that is the correct. There are several statutes that are mixed here.
So if the Comp Act doesn't apply, the Comp Act bar obviously doesn't apply.
The Comp bar does not. I believe that is the case. The Comp bar would not apply if we find you are not a statutory employer.
Right, because the whole act doesn't apply to the situation.
That is
therefore, the thought that extending and expanding the reach of the beneficial motivations behind the Comp Act to the outer orbits of statutory employers cuts both ways. Could be the very next case we get is please, please, please don't hold that because I've got some deep pockets I can sue in tort, and the moment you say there's a statutory employer, I'm cut off.
I believe that there are some complicated implications of that, and you could very much see that, and we actually see in many of the cases that we've briefed where the statutory employer doctrine, which has arrived either at this court or the Court of Appeals, is often coming into play through the Comp Bar as opposed to directly through the commission in a request or appeal for benefits.
That takes the case out of the simplistic notion that let's just be nice.
It does. I mean, it cuts both ways. I guess I would put it that way, as you apply, suggest. If you extend statutory employer benefits or findings, you certainly eliminate that Comp Bar as well. And does the court have any further questions? It appears I'm out of time.
Rebuttal?
Thank you.
if you extend the statutory employer
reach, you were extending the comp bar reach.
Right.
He said opposite. So
he was misspoken, but he made the point.
Right.
But
yeah, the point you extend both.
The comp bar. It may help you in your case, and you may have the beneficial sense in this case, but the very next case could be an employer coming in and saying the same thing in order to get a comp bar.
That's true. But Your Honor asked, you know, whether you just search the record for whether the Harvey's Restoration Society was in the construction business. But if you do that, you're violating the principle that this court enunciated so clearly in Rodriguez, which is that's the wrong legal prism to look through. And if you look through the correct legal prism, was the work that Mr. Jeffrey's doing part of the trade business or occupation of the Harvey School Restoration Society, the conclusion has got to be there that it was, because that's what they said they were going to do, that's what they did, and that's what they reported that they did. So, you know, I don't know what, I'm confused by the time. Am I over?
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you very much. The court will be in recess until 9 a.m. tomorrow morning.